So I'll go like two more. I'll take two. Got one more here.
Others come in, I can transfer those. Here. The 158 points possible. Now, in this these first two sets, each one's worth 5 points. And on the first set, it's a matter of 1 point per piece of information here. On the second set, it's 1 point per letter for spelling errors, up to a maximum of five. So, number one, Lelumai should be first person, singular, perfect. Middle and passive indicative. Middle or passive indicative. On that middle or passive, if they have either one or the other, but not both, it's half a point off. Okay, first person, singular, perfect, middle or passive, indicative. Okay, number two, Luoy should be third person, singular, present, active, optative. Third person, singular, present, active, optative. Number three, Lelukate should be second person, plural, perfect, active, indicative. That's second person, plural, perfect, active, indicative. Okay, number four. Leluso or Leluso should be second person, singular, pluperfect, middle or passive, indicative. And second person, singular, pluperfect, middle or passive, indicative. Number five, Luoy Mitha, first person, plural, present, middle or passive, optative. First person, plural, present, middle or passive, optative. Number six, Eleluke should be third person, singular, pluperfect, active, indicative. Third person, singular, pluperfect, active, indicative. And then the last one, Lusaita should be second person, plural, aorist, active, optative. Second person, plural, aorist, active, optative. Any questions on any of those seven? Yeah. Okay, so total possible 35 points, each one worth five there. Okay, now the second section here, again, each one's worth 5 points. Subtract 1 point for every spelling error. In other words, every letter that's wrong, up to a maximum of five. For a breathing mark, well, there's really no, except for the optional augment on the pluperfect forms. So, since that's in parentheses, I'm not going to worry too much about that. Accents, you don't have to worry about. So, basically, it's just 1 point per letter. Number one, your third person plural pluperfect middle passive indicative should be the Lelunto, or just Lelunto, depending on the way, or you just put an epsilon in parentheses here, and then Lelunto. That's lambda, epsilon, lambda, upsilon, nu, tau, omicron.
And it's 0.11.
Right, 1 point per letter. If it's so completely irrecognizable, you have to use some judgment.
Omicron, but they've got no tie.
Oh, good point. Actually, the best way to score this would be for each, you know, a point for each piece of information that they got right in the thing, but it's real, it can be real hard to evaluate that way. I'd say just take off 1 point on that, since there's one letter wrong. That just have to use a little bit of mercy and grace and so forth here. If there's any question on any of these, just leave a question mark and I'll just have to decide it. Okay, number two. You should have lu sine toe, lambda upsilon sigma alpha iota nu tau omicron. Lambda upsilon sigma alpha iota nu tau omicron. There's middle operative form. Okay, questions?
Those are all
synchronous.
It looks like a six.
Six, okay. Okay. Get the hand ready for it away. All right. Number three, second person singular aorist passive optative should be luthase. That's lambda, upsilon, theta, epsilon, iota, eta, sigma.
John, is that an iota
session?
On your eta?
Look on the back.
If I wrote it that way.
No, I'm very bad. Probably got a paradigm
then. I'll show it to you after class.
Okay. Lupe ace. Okay, number four.
Excuse
me? Yeah. Okay. Probably thinking some junk or something. Number four, second person perfect active indicative, should be lelukas, lambda, epsilon, lambda, upsilon, kappa, alpha, sigma. Lambda, epsilon, lambda, upsilon, kappa, alpha, sigma. Lelukas. Number five, first person singular aorist middle optative should be lusimane, lambda, upsilon, sigma, alpha, iota, mu, eta, nu. Lambda, upsilon, sigma, alpha, iota, mu, eta, nu. Okay. Go ahead, Tony. Do you want to correct one too, Tony, or do you want to say that? Yeah, a couple of them. Who wants to forsake one of their papers? There you go. We're on part B. And numbers, we just did number five. These are worth 5 points, 1 point per letter on the spelling in this section. So every spelling error, every letter that's wrong is worth a point. Number six, second person plural present active optative should be lu oite, lambda, upsilon, omicron, iota, tau, epsilon. Lambda, upsilon, omicron, iota, tau, epsilon. Okay, and then the last one, third person plural pluperfect active indicative should be an optional epsilon there. You can have that in parentheses or just either have it or don't have it, either way. And then it's either el lelukeson or just plain lelukeson. So optional epsilon, lambda, epsilon, lambda, upsilon, kappa, epsilon, iota, sigma, alpha, nu. Okay, optional epsilon, lambda, upsilon, kappa, epsilon, iota, sigma, alpha, nu. Okay, questions anyone on these? Okay, then part C. This is worth 28 points, and the point breakdown is given. Same kind of thing here, 5 points on these. Some of these will be 5 points. Basically, 1 point per spelling error again on all of these, really. So the first perfect active infinitive, you should have lelukenai, epsilon, lambda, epsilon, lambda, upsilon, kappa, epsilon, nu, alpha, iota. 1 point per letter. Lambda, epsilon, lambda, upsilon, kappa, epsilon, nu, alpha, iota. Lelukenai. Now on this next one, it's worth 9 points. You get 5 points for the word, and then 2 points for each of the endings, you know, for the feminine and the neuter. And again, 1 point per spelling error. So So the perfect active participle dictionary form with endings for feminine neuter should be lelukos. That's lambda, epsilon, lambda, upsilon, kappa, omega, sigma. Omega, sigma. And then your feminine should be uia, upsilon, iota, alpha. And the neuter, omicron, sigma, os. Lelukos, leluquia, lelukos. Or you could have written the whole thing out three times, you know.
He put all the genitives down, too.
Oh, did he? Okay, pretty complete. I didn't ask for that, but that's good. Did he have it right?
Yeah.
Otos? Okay. Okay, good.
So it's os?
For the neuter?
Yeah.
Yes. Os, omicron, sigma.
So if they have O and discount one off for the...
Yeah, 1 point off for the new instead of sigma. Okay, any other questions? Okay, number three, perfect middle and passive infinitive should be lelustai, lambda, epsilon, lambda, upsilon, sigma, theta, alpha, iota. Lelustai. Lambda, epsilon, lambda, upsilon, sigma, theta, alpha, iota. 5 points on that one. 1 point per letter. To a maximum of five. Then 9 points on this next last one, same situation here. Perfect middle passive participle. You should have lelumenos. Leluminos, I guess. I don't like the accent there. Anyway, lambda, epsilon, lambda, upsilon, mu, epsilon, nu, omicron, sigma. Lambda, epsilon, lambda, upsilon, mu, epsilon, nu, omicron, sigma. And then your feminine should be eta, and the neuter, omicron, nu, on. Just like your standard old adjective. Eta and on. Okay, you probably can't lose 2 points on that eta one. Score it that way anyway. A little bit of mercy once in a while. Okay, part D is to translate the following conditional sentences in English and identify them as type A, B, or C according to the classifications in the text. Okay, now the way to score this is it's 5 points for each of the classifications. So if they got the classification wrong, it's 5 points off. And 15 points for the translation. Now in the translation, I'll probably have to score that myself. So what I'd like you to do is just circle anything that's wrong. So my attention will be drawn to it, and then I'll evaluate the points.
What
yes, Glenn?
What if they put type 1, 2, or 3 instead of type A, B, or C? But if you accord, you know.
But if they line up, okay. Yeah, if they line up, if 1 corresponds to A and 2 corresponds to B and 3 corresponds to C, we'll give you some grace on that. Actually, these are pretty arbitrary classifications anyway. Aside from getches, you'd probably never see type A, type B, type C. Okay, Steve could probably sit it out here. We'll go through this real quick. Okay, number one is type B. Type B. And where you have a subjunctive with an in the conditional. And just about anything on the other side. And the translation, an me ekluthe, epiluse ton logon tu theu. If he is not weary, he will interpret or explain the word of God. Should be the translation. If he is not weary, he will explain or interpret the word of God. Now, of course, it could be she or it as well, but normally you go with he there without context to go by. So if he is not weary or does not give out or is not ungirded, any of those possibilities, he will explain or interpret the word of God. Yes.
He would not give out?
It's getting a little bit... Well, since it is a subjunctive, it is a subjunctive, but it's just because of the clause relations. But would isn't going to really throw up the sense off very much, no. Because it is a hypothetical, that'd be fine. It'd just be a little bit more awkward in English, is all. Okay, but it's not going to fundamentally change the situation. All right, that is an aorist passive subjunctive form there because the verb is used only in the passive. It's kind of a... I don't know if you'd call it a deponent verb or more, it's got a stative idea, it's got a middle idea, so it's just not used in the active. And aorist in the subjunctive is just indicating not a progressive thing, but just an indefinite aspect. So if he is not weary, if he is not giving out, if he has not given out, probably might even be better in that case. He will explain and interpret the word of God. Okay, in the sentence number two, that one is... Type A, and so 5 points for the type. And eu analue ton anthropon ho anthropos para luthesetai. I had a lot of fun trying to make up sentences that would be conditionals and get these words in, too. So they're a little bit strained, some of them. Okay. If he does not loose the man will be paralyzed. If he does not loose the man or untie the man will be paralyzed or weakened or disabled or undone. Number of possibilities there for that last one. Of course, paralyzed is a cognate to the Greek word there.
If he is not loosing?
If he is not loosing the man, yes, that would be fine. You know, it's a present form, so. If he is not loosing the man will be paralyzed. That'd be fine. With the present, you can go either indefinite aspect or progressive.
Is untie all right?
Untie is fine. Yeah, for the first one, yeah, untie. If he does not untie the man will be paralyzed. That's what I had in my mind. I pictured this guy being tied up. Kind of a strange sentence, but better than some of Getch's. Okay. Greg?
You're going to correct.
Yeah, I'll correct this part as far as point value. So if there's anything wrong, just circle the portion that's wrong.
You've got destroyed, and then you've got parentheses loosed around. The man will be destroyed or loosed around.
Okay. I'll have to make some judgment on that one. You might get it confused with another one of them, and you know. So I'll just have to make a judgment on that. Okay, then the last one is a type C. And that's worth 5 points. And the sentence, Eme katelosen tus dioxantas emas uk an apeluthemen. Okay, if he had not destroyed or thrown down or abolished those who persecuted us or pursued us, those who persecuted us or pursued us. This is an aorist participle from dioko to pursue. And then hemos would be the object of that participle. So if he had not destroyed those who persecuted us or pursued us, we would not have been set free. We would not have been set free. Okay. That's an aorist passive form there for. So we would not have been set free or released or pardoned or let go or dismissed. Any of those. We would not have been dismissed. We would not have been pardoned. We would have been released.
What about our persecutors? What are persecutors?
Okay, that's all right. The problem there is in English, it doesn't really convey the fact that it was an aorist participle. It could be present. Although you can probably get that if he had not destroyed. I think I'd probably let it go in that case because you had. Did they make it pretty clear if he had not destroyed? Did they have something in the past? The first part, okay. That'll pretty much set it anyway. So that's fine. Okay, so if he had not destroyed our persecutors or so forth, that'd be fine. Okay, now go ahead and put the total points wrong so far. And just put, minus however many so far, and then I'll add the other points wrong later on. And don't subtract from 158 or anything, but there'll be 158 possible. Go ahead and pass it back to the owner. Take a look and double check the addition and so forth. If there's any questions in your own mind as far as one of the forms and so forth, point values, make a note of that and make a note at the top so I can see it. So I can look at it. Yes, Harry. It should be both middle and passive, but it's only a half point to get that.
Yeah, we did on the last one, too.
Oh, yeah. Analytical does it that way, doesn't it? Okay. Okay. Well, if that's the only mistake you made, you probably should tape. Okay, after everybody gets a chance to look at their paper and double-check the addition there, you might let Dan take a look at his, and you can pass him to the front, and we'll continue with the Gospel of John here in the last session. No sense getting into anything new right now. Last day.
Yeah, that's what it was, right?
What's that? Oh, for the correction, you probably don't need to do that, unless you want it for your own. No, I don't think so. Go ahead and sign the roll book. What's that? Yeah. Right, he probably never will log to live. I'm that way. I can remember some very, you know. It's funny, though, when you miss something, you tend to remember it a lot longer, at least I do. That's the one that stands out, you know. Of course, if you follow that philosophy, the guy would be better off in life if he misses them all. Okay, there must be a limit to that somewhere. Do we have all the papers? All right, well, let's get back into a more edifying note here. And my marker indicates we're around chapter 2, verse 6, thereabouts. If we were talking about those vessels for the wine, the water. I think we had gotten through verse 6. And with the water vessels, stone water vessels, yes.
All right, one question. What was the meaning of Colossae? I found the parts that were going back to vessels, but I didn't get the meaning of it.
Korusai, okay. Yes, that one. Let me check something here. Yeah, containing something like that. I think we translated holding or containing.
Holding.
It's a participle again. It's in parallel to the other participial constructions here. So, kemenai, lying, holding each one, and now I think they're all taking that as distributional. So each one holding, containing, something like that. Yes, Eric, did you have a question there?
Comment?
You're in line, Nick?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, was there any other questions on verse 6 before we let him take off here? But that's having place for or holding or containing, the translation of that. Okay, go ahead then, Eric, in verse 7. Ooh, that one, we did that one. Yeah, we're on verse 7 next. Okay. Okay.
I'm sure what it means.
It means to fill, and this is an imperative form, second person plural imperative. So fill, it's his command to fill. Let me check it here. Gemizo, it's a zeta. And sometimes you can't tell when you see an aorist form. You don't know what's changed there. But it's gemizo, meaning to fill.
Jesus said to them, fill water in the water jars.
Okay, that's all right. You might, hudatos, you might just say, fill the water vessels with water, something like that. Fill the vessels with water, water jars with water. So we translate with water, but it's, there's no width, of course, there. But fill, but we have to stick something in to make any sense out of it. Yeah, fill the vessels of water, something like, fill the water vessels with water. It'd be a more literal rendering, and we'd probably translate it with. Okay, showing the kind of filling that's taking place. It's filling a water kind of filling. Okay, and then last clause.
And they filled them until upwards.
Yeah, that's literally what it's saying. They filled them until upwards. So most there's a lot of interesting translations of this. Fill it up to the brim, that type of thing. Ano would be the kind of the upper portion, the upper part. So fill it until the upper part. Fill until the upward. So that's why some say fill it to the brim, that type of thing. Yes.
Is that a noun then, or is it more
adverb? Yeah, it's more of an, it's actually an adverb form. And, but in this case, it's like an adverb is functioning like a noun in a way. Yeah, it's almost substantized. It's probably not really a straightforward example of that, but until upper part, you can't really. It's really pretty much functioning. Generally, a noun will fit into that position, and so that's kind of the position it's taking. Maybe like a non-declinable noun or something. Okay. Then verse 8. Glenn. No, Tony. I guess you're next. Tony.
Kai, the guy. Ambisate. Nun kai. Perete. To. Architrictolino.
Mm-hmm.
Poi de.
Okay, and then that comes from Pharaoh, believe it or not. I think you recall that verb. Okay, any guesses here? What, do you need some help?
You got an Inca part.
Okay, right. This first one, yeah, there's just some new vocabulary here. This antlesate is to draw. It's like that drawing from a well, drawing water, so forth. So it's an imperative form. It's an aorist imperative form from antleo, contract verb. So antlesate would be draw out, or draw. And what else do you need there? Architriclino is the governor of the feast, is the way they translate it, the master of the feast, something along those lines. Lots of different translations of this. Chief of the feast or something, you know, the head guy. Yeah, right. Okay, and anything else you need there? Oh, you had those already. Okay. What don't you have? Well, there's ferete is from Pharaoh, means to carry. And then enenkan is the aorist of that. So, anything else you need? Yeah, literally he says to them, it's a present form. But, you know, we're being projected back there, so. Yeah, in place it is to draw out, and then nun is now. Draw out now. Mm-hmm. Present, so be bringing something of present imperative. It's interesting, you started out with an aorist imperative, then followed up with a present imperative. So you draw it out and then be bringing it. Okay. To the governor of the feast, or whatever you want to call it there. And then the next is just kind of like a new sentence, as it were. Just translate it and probably here.
And.
Put that in your next word. And, hoi, enenkan. This hoi is like an article that's functioning almost like a part, you know, it's like the one. You know, you almost have to understand the ones here. It's the subject of the verb. And enenkan is the aorist of bring, so. And they brought. That's about all it says. Yeah, and they brought. So in other words, they fulfilled the commandment. They did it. Not wasting any words there. Yes.
I don't get it.
Yeah, well, at least you're honest.
The final thing, they bounce back and forth between the present and the air.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, there's no concord in there. It's like, and he says.
Yes.
And I get, you know, the imperatives, you know, draw it and be bringing it.
Right.
It bounces back to the earth again, and they brought it. And
yes.
The same narrative.
Yeah.
Why is there any concord here?
Well, I don't know. I can't really. This has been happening along the way here, where they'll use an aorist form, and then they'll say, and then they'll put a present in there, especially with this thing. And he says, and he says, and he says. It's very commonly in the present, and it's just. I think it may be idiomatic. It may be just the way that they're customarily speaking with regard to this. They're drawing you in. There are some people that talk that way, even in English, you know. And when they tell a story about something in the past, they kind of bring you into it. And then he says this, and he says this, and he says this. And they'll do that. And authors will do that. And that's the philosophy behind it. But why they sometimes go back and forth between the two? I mean, the whole thing's in the past. And anytime they use a present verb like that, it's because they're projecting you back there. It's probably making a little bit more realistic, a little bit more immediate to you, a little bit feeling of. And he's saying this. That's the only thing I could say there. Yes.
What was the aspect of an aorist imperative?
More of an indefinite aspect, you know. And sometimes it can be, have the idea of a start or ingressive action. In other words, to start doing this as opposed to be doing this. So, in other words, okay. To start off with an aorist, start drawing out and be carrying,
and
would fit very well. Yeah.
So that would fit with what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that's more of an aspect within the command. I think the thing that was bothering him the most is the fact that we have legge there. He says this, and then says that they brought. And instead of keeping a continuity of having, he said this and they brought. Or saying he says this and they bring, you know, and keep it, you know, in the same. They're going back and forth. And all I can say is that that happens very frequently in the New Testament, of going back and forth like that. It must have been just a very common way to speak.
When we see commands together like this, will it be common to see the aorist
and a present? Oh, I don't know. I don't know if you'd see necessarily a regular pattern that way. I can't think. Sometimes you may see them both aorist. Sometimes you may see them both present. Sometimes first aorist. You probably wouldn't see too often the present first and then an aorist afterwards, I would think, because once you started making the commands, especially if they're consecutive commands, the first one would probably most likely be the aorist one, because they haven't done anything yet, and they're going to start doing it, and then the rest might be continued present. We'll just have to watch that and see what kind of pattern emerges. Never noticed anything.
It seems that if you have a definite to begin with, and then you go to a more definite command,
mm-hmm.
that there's a progression going on there. In other words, the second command is to further clarify the first one, as to, in some fashion.
Well, there may be situations like that where a general command is given first and then more specific detail. In that case, you might, in fact, see a present first and then aorist following. But this one, where you're making a series of commands, you know, you're starting, you know, with an aorist to get the action moving, and then you know. Like you overcome the resistance first, and then once you've got some momentum going, you keep going present. That's probably going to be a fairly common pattern. But I've never really noticed a pattern in this. That would be another good study for somebody, but that would be a very difficult one to evaluate. Yes.
By the way, I
have a smart computer for that. Well, that's the rumors that we're hearing. You have to have a pretty good machine. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, maybe someday. Yes. In verse 8?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and just translate it, and they brought. And the hoi here is not the... just consider that, even though it's an article form, it's functioning pretty much like a relative pronoun here. You'll see that won't be uncommon. In other words, it's kind of representing the servants, you know, hoi doulois or something like that. Hoi dou, or something like that. It's not really stated, but it's the one he's talking. Oh, diakonois probably. Back up there, he's been talking about the servants. Okay. And then verse 9. Glenn, you're up next.
So who wrote oil on, getting a man on, tie oof, a day, hold an essence, for the diaconoi, a day, sign, for it, in the cotter, so who wrote, for the tone, nun theon, for the church, no.
Okay. Oh, that's to taste. It's a verb to taste. Yeah, it's from guomai.
Guomai.
Yeah, guomai. It's as or like. So as. And as.
Having tasted the
Chief of the feast, yeah, whatever.
The water, wine, it had become.
Yes. This is a participle, so you might say the water wine having become, or the water which had become wine.
Having become.
Yeah, the wine having become. Of course, there's your perfect idea there, perfect passive participle. So it's.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Got that reduplication there. So it's a perfect, so it's become and it still is. Okay, it's present result.
And did not.
This is, did you recognize the verb here? A day?
Oh, you said something about
A day
earlier.
Yeah.
I don't.
Okay, it's from oida. It's actually a pluperfect form technically, but it's, you know, we normally translate it with past. To know.
To know.
So. And not and having known or something.
And they did not know from where.
Mm-hmm.
It was.
Yeah, there you go again with your
from where
present. Yeah, he had not having known from where it is.
those servants
mm-hmm.
who knew ain't the cotest.
Okay, it's a participle from that drawing out again. Yeah, having drawn out. The ones having drawn out.
And those servants
knew
the ones having drawn out the water.
Okay.
Phoning to tell, told?
Yes, yeah, to sound. It's kind of got the idea of calling it out because it's emphasizing making sound. So you might say he called out, sounded out.
The director of the feast called.
Yeah, Nymphion is the bridegroom. So he called the bridegroom, sounded to the bridegroom, something like that. Even though it's accusative here, it's he kind of shouts to the bridegroom or something. You know, sounds to him.
That was how
they
used my double accusative.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you could have had another accusative of a thing he said too. So yeah. Mm-hmm. So he calls the bridegroom. The chief of the feast.
Certain parts over that. What does that make? That is that just something strange? Because I don't recognize why there's certain parts
of coming in. I think it just. Well, let me check here. That sometimes futures have that, but yeah. It's just because of the contract verb, I guess. It's phoneo. Yeah, that's the reason. It's just a present form. Yeah, it's a contract verb. So what you had was an epsilon plus epsilon iota, and it still comes out epsilon iota, but you get the circumflex on it. Okay, so the chief of the feast calls to the bridegroom or sounds to the bridegroom. Now, one thing there, this eideson, this verb form, this start clause thing, hoi de diakonoi eideson. You might translate that, the death probably be contrastive here. It's kind of saying that the chief of the feast did not know from whence it is, but the servants knew, the ones having drawn the water. The servants knew. So that's just an aorist form, again, third person plural. So, but the servants knew, the ones having drawn the water. And then he calls to the bridegroom, the chief of the feast calls to the bridegroom. Okay, yes. Well, probably not, just because it's a perfect participle here. As he tasted the water having become wine. In other words, it's indicating that it had already become wine at the time that he tasted it. Tasted the water having become wine. In other words, at the time that he tasted it, it had previous to that time, become wine, and it was abiding in the state of having become wine at the time that he's tasting it.
I'm wondering why are they using the word as that?
Oh, that's kind of keying the following action. In other words, it's as he's tasting the wine, as it were. If we forget about that other clause, it's just as he's tasting the wine and does not know whence it is, but the others knew who it is, he says in other words, it kind of takes you all the way down to he says. So as he's tasting this wine, he says to the bridegroom.
There's a lot of...
a lot of parentheses in between.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Does that mean that... I mean, when I first thought that was connected to the wine was having become...
Yes.
As he was tasting it, the wine was having become...
Oh, uh-huh.
Water having become wine.
Uh-huh.
There's an action like... When the Levites stepped out on the Jordan River, it was spread away as it was stepping out.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thought.
Yes. The only problem there is that you don't have... If you had everything chopped off following that, in other words, if there was nothing else following, and you stopped your sentence right there, it might be because you'd have to put a predication in there. The wine... let's see, how did we do this? You need something to indicate that as he was tasting it, it became. And, you probably wouldn't use the perfect. You probably, as he tasted it, it became. You probably just use an aorist there, just, you know, the same as you had before, and get the action the same time as the action of the main verb. And you probably wouldn't want to use a participial construction, because the participial construction is not showing so much direct action. It's showing that the action has already taken place, or if it were a present participle, there's another possibility. Use a present participle there. As he tasted the water, wine becoming, as it was becoming wine, or something like that. Get a circumstantial participle in there, or something that might do it. But this way, the wine having become, it is indicating it's already happened.
Two separate thoughts.
Yeah. Well, that could be done too. If you wanted to clarify that, they could break it up into two separate thoughts completely and really express that. And just say, as he tasted the water, it was becoming wine or something. And there'd be a way, like with the imperfect, it was becoming or something. There's a number of ways that could be done. So I'm inclined to think that this is just saying it had become that. Now, how much time it had transpired, you know, whether it was becoming that, you know, had become that before it got to his tongue, or whether it was... Yeah, right. But it looks like Jesus did a miracle, changed the whole thing. It was all... And then as they were serving it and so forth, that's what they were seeing. Mm-hmm.
There's two things going on here that indicate that. I don't know which... If we have the same situation where you have an errant and then another action in the perfect,
mm-hmm.
Is it... always that because you're using the perfect, that action is going to be antecedent?
Good question.
Or is it
to the action?
Is it because of the function that it's a parenthetical statement in here also,
mm-hmm.
that is affecting it?
I think it's a combination of both, and I think when you use a perfect participle, for example, in a context, the perfect participle is going to be also... Nothing much was said about perfect participles in the chapter. It just gave you the form of them. That was it. But that's something we're worthy of testing. But it looks to me, so anytime you have a perfect participle, it's always going to be perfect with reference to the action of the main verb also. In other words, to use a perfect participle is connoting something about the verbal action associated with the participle in relationship to the action of the main verb. Now, if the main verb is aorist, like it is here, and then the perfect participle is used within that context, it would suggest that with reference to the time that is going on, it's perfect. In other words, it had happened antecedent to that and then had a then existing result at the time of that past action. So this can get, if this is true, this can get very interesting if you say we have a pluperfect participle or something. And there you'd be getting several stages of past action, you know. Don't think there was one in the New Testament, so we can be spared that agony, I suppose. That would be worthy of testing, though. If anybody wants to do that, in addition to the aorist participles, just take a look at the perfect participles and see that if the perfect participles always have action antecedent the action of the main verb, except for the fact that, in other words, we're talking about the initial action. The result, see, it's kind of a cross between the two. The result is simultaneous with the action of the main verb, but the initial action that produced the result is antecedent to the action of the main verb. You see what I'm saying? In other words, if we say here, he drank the wine, the water having become wine. Well, at the time that he drank the water, it had already become wine. And so you might say the state of being wine was simultaneous to the action of the main verb. The result, you know, of the perfect participle was simultaneous to the action of the main verb because he drank it at the time that it was wine. But the its having come into that state was antecedent to the action of the main verb. It had already become wine before he drank it. So the perfect is kind of fitting into that category. I think that's probably a fair analysis of it, and I would be surprised if that didn't hold all throughout the usages of those. Probably don't have as many perfect participles to worry about, of course, as you do eras, so it may not be as hard to track down and check out. Yes? Yes.
I'm wondering how you're going to look at a present result just by the fact that they have drawn water.
Well, it is a perfect participle, and I think the point is they having drawn the water. In other words, there was, as far as they're concerned, see, they had done this, and the question is why not use an aorist participle, you know, and that would be, you know, just if you're dealing with the action. But I think, again, the emphasis is upon the fact that they had done this, and having done this, they came to a certain, there was a certain result in terms of their knowledge and so forth, that they had drawn it, and it was, the water was already drawn, as it were. See, the water was already poured out into the cups and given to the people, and so there was a present result of their antecedent action of doing the drawing. And then there may be also putting a little bit of emphasis upon the fact, since we're talking about the knowledge that they had, they knew, having done this, that they were abiding with the result of the knowledge that they had done it and so forth, and that's what gave them the assurance, understanding, you see, that a miracle had happened. Okay. But that is interesting. You might just as easily, if you didn't think about it ahead of time, expect an aorist participle here. And this verb could be certainly seen in the aorist as well as the perfect, but this is definitely a perfect participle. Yes?
I want to ask you another question about that aorist versus present when they bounce back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to figure it out because here they've got Jose Pegusato, which is aorist, uh-huh. Back to they brought. And
yes.
He doesn't know from whence it is, and then it says, and he calls to the, you know, to the bridegroom, his life. From this sentence and the previous sentence, I get a feeling like it's like they're standing in time and it's he's saying, and then they bounce ahead and said, this is happening, and now mm-hmm. this is happening, and then mm-hmm. they bounce ahead again and they say,
sure.
Well, that happened and now this is happening.
Uh-huh.
I mean, is that what they're doing, or are they just...
I think that's what's happening. It's kind of keeping you in contact with the present time and with that time as well. And it's not really too strange when you think about it. They're trying to keep the conversation really living to you, but also make you aware that we haven't forgotten about the present, that we're looking back at a story that's in the past. And so each time a new sentence begins, it usually starts with an aorist or something, and you know you're talking about past time. And then once you get into the sentence, they take you back into the present, you know, and you're seeing it happen. Just like this phrase.
The reader through time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's the general impression that you get. And there may be, this is another worthy study for somebody who's taken both Greek and Hebrew, is to compare the concept that you see in the walk consecutive of taking you back, you know, and using perfect verbs for imperfect actions, vice versa. That's what Hebrew does. To see if that kind of an influence, mental influence, is reflected here. In other words, what you'd have to do is compare this with classical Greek and see if classical Greek does this same kind of thing all the time. And if they don't, then there may be some evidence that some of this is coming from Hebrew ways of thinking. Because for the Hebrew students, they're already aware of the fact that in Hebrew narrative, for example, there's two basic tense forms in Hebrew. There's the perfect, which is completed action, and the imperfect, which is incomplete action, which corresponds often to our future or present or something. And the perfect will correspond to our past. And what they will do in historical narrative, where you want to tell the story of David did such and such and so forth, most of the narrative is in imperfect verb forms. In other words, action that's future or incomplete action. And what in effect is happening, and most of the scholars feel is what's happening, is that they will take you, they'll start off the narrative with a perfect verb form, and then they'll continue it in a series with the and, just like this de here, and then use imperfect forms, and they call them converted forms. And in effect, what's happening is that they're starting off with a past tense form, so-and-so, such-and-such happened, and then they're taking you back, and then he does this, and then he does this, and then he does this, and then he does this. And you're just flowing along in past time. Although, the forms are like the present or future forms. And so I'm wondering if that's something that's being reflected here too, or whether this is very customary and common for the Greeks. It's very common in the New Testament, that I can say. I'm not conversant with a lot of other Greek literature, so... And that would be another question for Themis, too, to ask them, how do they talk now? Do they do this kind of thing back and forth? Are they changing back and forth and trying to bring the person in to the picture? I think part of it may be explainable by the more emotional and expressive and graphic nature of the people involved. I mean, the Greeks are a lot... They like to talk with a lot more life, you know, and this is one way to convey that, kind of push you right back into it. So we'll have to maybe jot that one down. When Themis gets here, we're going to have a whole list of things for him. Okay, it'd be fun to bring him into class, you know, if it ever works out, you know, and have you all be able to. Not this one, I don't think. Probably not until the fall one. So I don't know. We might have to be able to just make a special meeting or something. But we don't want to get him loaded up. That's the thing. When he comes, he needs to get ministered too. So we want to keep that in mind. Okay. But if he's staying at my house, like he often does, we might just invite some of the Greek students over, you know, and have dinner together and do something like that. We'll see. We'll keep that in mind. Okay. First spell only. Okay, we've got a couple more minutes. Any other questions on this? All right. Going on to verse 10 then. Is that right? Yeah, verse 10. And who's next? Mark? Okay.
And he says to him, every man first says the good wine,
mm-hmm.
and then afterwards sets out the last. You have set out with present results the good wine. Even now, or until now.
Okay, good. This tetericos is to keep. You kind of this idea of keeping the good wine until now, but rather than from tithemi. So you kept the good wine until now. And also, there's this phrase kai hotan methus tosen. This actually means and whenever they might become drunken. In other words, it's let me see. This is a aorist passive subjunctive form from methusko, and it means when at least the interlinear translates when they become drunken, whenever they might have become drunken, then the inferior. So that they every man first defined that the good wine is places the good wine first, and then whenever they might have become drunken, the inferior, the lesser. You have kept the good wine until now, till right now. Okay.
RT.
Yeah, RT. Right. And he'os, this is quite a graphic picture. He'os, until right now, right at this moment. Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll pick up there then.